This is one of those Sundays where I am so thankful that Doris puts a bottle of water up here. You know what? I looked up this morning and I saw Agnes here. And she's been out for a couple of weeks. It's been a rough couple of weeks with some cold and just mucky weather. But she's back at it. Good to see you. Good to see you. All right. What's that?
I'm just reading
Run Through the Ringer
up there.
Yeah. To you ladies that are over, better go up high here. Let's say 70. Okay. Anybody? 70. No, you're not a woman. Okay. If you're 70 or over, would you admit to that this morning? Okay. A ringer was those things that they used to have on washing machines. And they had two rollers. What's that? Oh. Maybe it's not in the dictionary anymore. Two ringers, you would put them through, you put clothing through it, and it would wring them out, all right. So you know you would never want to get put through one of those ringers, right, Ike? You shake your head like you know from experience. Okay, very good. A ringer, don't want to get run through the ringer. All right. Probably all of us here at one point or another have felt like we've been there, though, haven't we? Whether we've actually been put through the ringer or just put through kind of a troubling circumstance in life. In fact, some of you might say right here and right now, I feel like I am going through a ringer. Right. Maybe you look back and you see, you know, you realize you're going through this ringer and it has something to do with your relationships. Maybe you're running through the ringer with your parents, or maybe you're running through the ringer with your children, or maybe you're running through the ringer because your health is suffering. For others of you, maybe you're grieving the loss of somebody who is near and dear to you. Maybe sometimes you feel like you're running through the ringer because your back is against the wall. We find ourselves at times like that. We can't move forward. We can't move backward. We can't move one side or the other. Sometimes we have gotten there because of our own doing. If we just step back and look at it, we realize I'm the one to blame. Others of us at times are put through the ringer because somebody else takes the lead and kind of begins to force our backs against the wall and put us through the ringer. Every week, for the next 3 or 4 weeks, we are going to talk about this, having our backs against the wall, having our lives feel like they're going through the ringer. And we're going to look this morning, as we did last week, at a process that we can apply to our own lives, because there is in this process a way to get our backs off of the back of the wall. It is a process that helps pull us out of the ringer. And if we can process it, if we can understand it not only in internally, kind of mentally in our minds. But if we can take that and apply it to life, we will find out that that four-step process can not only help us through the ringer, help us with our backs against the wall, but can really change our lives as it changes our perspectives. This process can give us a tool that we can use in our relationship with God that maybe we didn't have that tool before, but now we can have it and we can use it. It has been said, repetition is the mother of memory. So what I want you to do is to catch this process, because as we understand this process, it does give us power. And repeating the process, reading these verses hopefully over and over again over the next several weeks, will imprint in our minds and in our hearts this process that we can do all of the time, anytime, any day, any season. We see this process modeled for us in Psalm 143. You knew that because you read it this morning. Okay, you did good. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and listen to my plea. Answer me because you are faithful and righteous. Now, this is a struggle that David is going through, and he offers this prayer to God. He finds himself in a struggle. We don't know exactly what that struggle was, but that's okay. It makes it a little bit more easier for us to apply our own life situation into this process and watch it work. David, though, is saying, I am in trouble. I have a problem with no way out. And because I don't know what that problem is, we can insert our own problems that we might be dealing with. Apparently, David found himself in this spot before. He realizes he can't get out of it, so in this particular moment, he turns to God. It sure would be helpful if we could know what this situation was, but we don't. God says, David says, don't put your servant on trial, for no one is innocent before you. It is really David saying here, now God, I've got this problem, but don't blame it on me necessarily, because I may not be a part of the problem, just kind of a result of it. So don't blame me, but Lord, just in case, I am also a sinful person, and at times I can be part of the problem. He says, my enemy has chased me. He has knocked me to the ground and forces me to live in darkness. Like those in the grave, I am losing hope. I am paralyzed with fear. What he is saying is he writes this psalm out. Is he saying, look, I am here. I don't know how much I'm to blame or somebody else is to blame, but I am losing hope. I'm paralyzed. I'm in trouble. You need to help me, because I'm not going to get out of this situation unless I lean into you and depend upon you and allow your power to bring me through this situation. Sometimes when we get into situations in life, we don't understand, and we begin to ask questions of God. The first one is what? You get put into a situation you're not expecting, you don't think you can handle. What's the first thing you're going to say to God? That's right. Why me? Why me? Sometimes when you get into those situations, you're asking questions. God, why? And there is really not a problem with us asking God why. But sometimes when while we're doing it, we're asking him things that would not really get at why, but would begin to question God's intelligence and character. Sometimes it's almost like we're scoffing at God, pushing God to the point of questioning, why, God, would you allow this to happen to me? Our questions of God about why begin to shift into questions of, Lord, how can you do this to me? How could you leave me? And we move on from the question of why to the question of, God, can't you see things are out of control? David's not asking that question in verse 1. He says, God, you have always and only do what is right. So you know, Lord, I am here. You know and I know you only and always do what is right. You are good and you are worthy of my trust. And David starts this process of the four things we need to navigate through this process. It gives us a new perspective on life and is intended to help us find ourselves in the place we're at and help us to move on. So my challenge to you this week, because a couple of you, more than a couple of you, asked questions after the service last Sunday. I am going to give you the four steps that you need to follow to get through this process. I gave them last week, but I'm not sure I clearly communicated them. All right? So here we go. Four steps. Let me get another drink of water here. So my challenge is write these down and begin to commit them to memory. In verse 5, David says, I remember the days of old. I ponder all of your great works and think about what you have done. And I lift my hands to you in prayer. I thirst for you as parched land thirsts for rain. And what David is doing is outlining for us this four-step process. The process that we can insert our problems and our struggles with and work through them. Do you notice the first thing he said there? He said, I remember. I remember the days of old. Now, it's not like we normally go someplace by backing meep, 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 backing up, right? But in this case, if you're a truck guy, you know that beep, 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 beep. That means somebody's backing up. Usually they're behind you. And forget it. All right. And I think that what God has done, he's beginning to think back, and he's thinking about guys like Moses and another great biblical hero, David, his own life. He's probably thinking about the sons of Abraham as they grew up and shared their life lessons. And he said, I remember them, and I remember how you were faithful to them. So he says, I remember. And then he says, I ponder some of your great works. God, I'm going to stop, and I'm going to look at your greatness in the past, and I'm going to ponder it. I will look over the oceans and over the vastness of the sky, the mountains, the stars, the vastness of everything around me. And I will be amazed at the power of your thunder and lightning. It's here that he's going to kind of land down and choose to ponder the past. When we focus on our problems, they get right. But when we begin to think really about who God is and what he's done, they get smaller. Right. Consequently, when our minds get off of God, our problems seem to get bigger. And when we get our minds focused on God, our problems get smaller. Right. When our confidence gets small, when we begin to think beyond, you know, God and what he's doing in our lives, or when we forget to think about it, things, problems get bigger. And as we focus on God, they get smaller. So we want to remember and we want to ponder. And then he says in verse 5, oh, think of what you have done. I meditate specifically over the things that you have done in my life. And now we go to a third stage where we're getting more personal. And we're saying, God, help me remember how you have delivered me again and again and again. To meditate deliberately is to choose what we're going to think about and think about what God has done through those circumstances. This is only between you and God. So you're the one. Now it's more personal because you're sharing your stories. And maybe you're newer to the faith and you don't have a lot of stories to share, but you got 1, 2, 3, 4 around you that are maybe a little more in the faith or have been in the faith longer, and you can write about their sharings. You can think about what God has done in their lives. It's getting much more personal. So in essence, you are saying, Lord, I am looking through the lenses of history, not only at your majesticness and your power from the past, but Lord, I'm also focusing in more on what you're doing now and in my life, in the life of people around me. It's more personal. David then gives the fourth step. He says, I lift my hands to you in prayer. I thirst for you as parched land thirsts for rain. Now, lifting my hands to you in praise and thanksgiving is just something that we could call worship. When we come into God's house, when we are by ourselves or with a group of people, and we pause, that is worship. That is saying, Lord, I'm standing back and I'm seeing your power and your glory. And I stand in awe. And I realize that God is who he really is. And there's nothing God can't get through if I ask him to join me. He will get me through. The only response we can do is stand back and say, oh my God, I surrender myself to you. What happens when you go through this process is you remember what God has done in your life and in the lives of others, and it again just causes you to be in awe of God's activity and deliverance over the course of time. And this shift in focus away from our problems onto God, we may still find our back against the wall. We may still find ourselves run through the ringer. But now our focus has changed. And our focus isn't on the wall. It's not on the ringer. It is on the steadfastness and faithfulness of God. And once our focus shifts to God, your problems aren't so big anymore. You're ready to talk to God and listen to Him and allow Him to work in transformational ways. No longer is God out of the situation. He has been invited into our troubles and our messes. Anybody got any messes? I'm not going to ask you what they are, but none of you are. Well, one's really admitting it. Two's really admitting it. Three is really admitting it. And they're all men. Four is admitting. All right, now it's 3-1. Come on, lady. No, no. You're in a mess. But when you invite God into your troubles, it's a transformation that takes place. David focuses is now on God, and he asks him several different questions, several different prayers throughout the remainder of this chapter. He says, come quickly, Lord, and answer me, for my desperation deepens. He's saying, Lord, I can't do this. I need you. I'm not in a fun place. God, I have desperation, and it's causing me to move closer to you. God hates it when you struggle. And He hates it when there are situations in your life that cause you to hurt. But He does not get mad when those situations come about and we turn it over to Him and it drives us closer to Him. He wants us to come closer and closer. Second thing he prays about, he says, do not pull away from me or I will die. His presence, he sees God. He now is understanding God. Turns to God. There's more questions there. There's five more in that little passage. But my question comes to you this morning. You don't need to tell me verbally, but what are your battles today? Divorcing parents, a broken marriage, insurmountable debt, a ruthless boss, infertility, dementia, despair, depression. Take all those things. Pick the one or two that you're struggling with and do what David did. Pray for God's presence in your life, because God's presence changes everything. And one of the attributes of God is something called omnipresence. God is there all the time. God never moves away. He's always there. He's always beside you. And he wants to hear from you. And the most important person on his mind is you. And all you need to say is, Lord, come into my life, into this problem that I'm dealing with. And he will. Am I making you nervous? No. We were a little worried last week and asked if we could move the communion to this Sunday, so we have. That's why you got this little bag. This little bit of, what was Welch's first name? Okay. Was that a true story or were you making that up?
No, it's true. You can research it.
Okay. Oh, okay. Always a profit motive. One of the things I could remember as a kid was when we would come to the Lord's table. I was no super Christian, but I understood something about when the pastor got up and read and said, you know, when you gather together, do not eat and drink unworthily, because you are in essence bringing that damnation on yourself. Paul wrote about that. So he said, you know, you need to take this very, very seriously. And so one of those times, again, I wasn't like a real super Christian or anything like that, but I would come to those services ready to do some business with God and to communicate my shortcomings and surrender and ask God to come in and make the adjustments he needed. Sometimes he got a big old truck and beep, 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 beep. But it's in those quiet times that we remember what we've done and what we need and allow the Lord permission. He's a gentleman. We allow him permission to come in and to invade our lives. In the last hours of his life, Jesus was with his disciples and he said to them, you know, things are going to change, guys. You all kind of seeing the scoreboard one way, but it's going to change real quick. They all didn't understand what he was going to say. But that night, he would be arrested and beaten, accused falsely, and then brought to the people. Pilate didn't really want to throw the judgment on him, so he said to the Jewish people there, what do you want? And they said, crucify. Talk about having your back against the wall. And Jesus, before all that happened, we're told he was in the upper room with his disciples, and he took a loaf of bread, and after giving thanks, he broke it and said, take and eat. This is my body broken for you. This is foreshadowing what's going to happen tomorrow. I'm going to be broken for you. Because like David, I'm on your side. And I love you. You're the most important person on my mind. So I'll break it and I'll give it to you. And then he said, do this in remembrance of me. As believers today, you've been given a piece of the bread. There's a little saying that we as a church family share together. This bread which we break is the communion of the body of Christ. Let's share that together. This bread which we break is the communion of the body of Christ. And I invite you to take the bread, maybe break it, and then eat it. In like manner, after Jesus took the bread, he took the cup and he poured it out for them and he said, this cup is the covenant of my blood poured out for you for the forgiveness of sin. And he reminded them that night, as often as you take of the bread and you drink of the cup, you will remember. You will observe and remember what I have done for you. Well, she's playing tricks on me. It's the other one's not there. Oh, well, that was clever of me, wasn't it? I put two of the same. So the other thing that we say is this cup which we bless is the communion of the blood of Christ. This cup which we bless is the communion of the blood of Christ. You may drink of it with thanksgiving. I think I shared this with you before. It's in the book of Matthew, but not in all of the Gospels. Jesus is actually quoted as saying to his disciples, I will not eat of the bread or drink of the cup until I do it again with you in heaven. What a great reminder of what we have to look forward to and of God's invitation for us to allow him to guide our lives now. And ultimately, when we stand before the Lamb of God in eternity.